Everyone, welcome to On the Market. I'm your host, Dave Meyer, and today we're going to be digging into three of the most pressing and important headlines facing the real estate investing industry. And to do that, I have my friends Kathy Fecky, James Daynard, and Henry Washington joining us. Kathy, how are you today?
Doing great. We survived the atmospheric river, so all good.
What is an atmospheric river?
Apparently, when the clouds open up and just dump a lot of water.
So rain? Is that just a fancy term for rain?
Yeah, life-threatening rain in California.
Okay. Well, this is maybe why on this episode, we're going to be digging into headlines so that we don't just see things like atmospheric river and read too much into it when all it is rain. We'll be doing the same thing, hopefully, for the real estate market to help you not overreact to any potential headlines that you're seeing. James, how you been?
I'm good. I took off in the atmospheric river last night. It was a bumpy ride out.
It's almost like it's a normal weather phenomenon. All right. Henry, it's good to have you on as well. Hopefully down in Arkansas, you don't have to make up fancy words for just normal weather.
Yeah. Today, I am here despite the atmospheric brightness that we are experiencing. I believe some call it sunshine, but down here in Arkansas, we like to get pretty fancy.
We got a real meteorology team over here. Thank you for joining us. All right. Well, we do have a great show for you all today. We're going to be covering, like I said, a couple of major headlines facing real estate industry, like what's going on with the big NAR Stitzer lawsuit, Stitzer Burnett lawsuit, updates on credit markets and what's happening with banks and are they lending to real estate investors? And we'll be talking about fresh data about the labor market that we're seeing here in 2024. So let's just jump right into our first headline, which is Keller Williams reaches a $70 million settlement. If you remember, there's been this ongoing lawsuit against NAR and a lot of the largest real estate brokerages in the country alleging that they colluded to keep their commission structure in place against the best interest of home sellers. And we did get a jury verdict back in the fall that found NAR and some of their co-defendants liable. Now we're seeing Keller Williams, one of the largest brokerages in the country with over 180,000 real estate agents, reaching a settlement to address these antitrust claims. Now, there seems like this story just keeps evolving, but James, as an agent, what do you make of the updates in this story and how are you thinking about Keller Williams' behavior here and what it means for sort of the next few steps that might unfold from this lawsuit?
You know, I feel like we're going through an evolution of broker fees, right? And I think that happens in every business, every service. And what we're seeing now is the traditional way and the assumption of doing business might be getting changed, right? Where it's like, you're a broker, you just get paid this and you move on. You know, the fact that they settled does, I think, make a pretty important impression on what's going on right now, and it could open it up for other lawsuits. They did admit to no wrongdoing, and they were just trying to get this thing gone. And so it looks like they settled for the $70 million. They're trying to move on, and now they've agreed to change their business practices. I don't think it's going to impact us in the next 12 to 24 months, but over the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to see this evolution of broker fees, which I don't have a problem with whatsoever. Because if you really look at the history of brokers, back in the 90s, they didn't have the internet. They had books and advertising, and like brokers would meet together and they would have to like go over the inventory and then bring it out to the market. And it was a lot of work. And we still get paid the same percentage today with a lot higher numbers. So we're getting paid well. And I feel like this is going to be the evolution of the niche broker. And if you're a niche broker with a high level of service or a specialty, you're going to get paid well. And if you're just pushing paper and putting signs in the yard, you might get paid a lot less. And it could be going to that Redfin style model. And so I think people need to brace for it and don't be delusional about it. But I don't think it's going to have that much impact over the next 12 to 24 months.
Well, I'm curious because just as a reminder, as of right now, we have this jury verdict that held NAR liable, but we haven't heard from the judge like exactly what this means. So, Kathy, do you think this move by Keller Williams is kind of trying to head off like a really big injunction from the judge so that they don't change everything. And they're kind of saying like, okay, we'll change a little bit. And that way it won't disrupt their entire business model.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speak for them. I do know that NAR and Home Services have refused to settle. So they are taking a different bet. They think that they're, I guess, going to get a better deal if they keep fighting. Again, I'm trying to read minds here. I have no idea what's going on in those boardrooms. But I can tell you from personal experience that we had to settle a case once where we had absolutely nothing to do with it. We weren't involved. We were just named. And our attorney said, this is just a business decision. You have to look at it just like business. You could spend a whole bunch more money trying to fight, or you just put up your hands and say, we didn't do anything wrong, but go away. And so it could be that's what they did, or they just thought it could be worse if we wait. I don't know. When you go to a jury, you have a jury who may not know very much about real estate deciding your fate. So, you know, perhaps that is just, again, it was just a business decision.
Henry, have you noticed any changes in the way the agents you work with are operating, or what are you seeing?
No changes in the way they're operating so far. You know, I agree with James. I don't know that we'll see any major changes in the next 1 to 2 years, but I do think that the industry is going to change, and I don't believe it's a bad thing. You know, it's like any other industry. You typically get paid based on performance and level of service and customer service. And I think those agents and brokerages who are going to provide exceptional customer service and who are going to go above and beyond in their business practices are going to not just survive, but thrive in a market where you've got to provide those things in order to make money now. You didn't have to provide that before, right? You were going to get your percentage as long as you were the named broker or agent on that deal. You have to think about home buyers, especially first-time home buyers. They're called first-time home buyers. They have no idea what a good level of service is from a real estate agent, right? They're just kind of trusting that this person knows what they're doing, and they kind of just have to take what's given to them. It's not till they've been through maybe their first deal and then they get a better agent on their second home purchase, and then they realize, oh my goodness, like our first agent was just really didn't do much compared to what the level of service that we're getting now. And so I think that, you know, it's just going to mean that, like I said, the better agents who provide a good quality of service and operate a better business will do well.
Yeah, my concern is that people won't get a buyer's agent, and they'll either try to do the negotiation on their own, or they'll use the listing agent. So my message to all you out there who maybe have not bought your first property, be really careful about going to the listing agent and using them to double represent you. That was our very first deal. I didn't really know back then. This was a long time ago before I knew anything about real estate. And I didn't know the difference between a buyer's agent and a listing agent. So I just went with the listing agent. And in retrospect, you know, they weren't serving me. They were hired by the seller. And so they did not negotiate on my behalf, because that would be, you know, how do you do that when you're representing both? It's like getting an attorney to represent two parties, you know, speaking of the NAR situation. So that's my concern, is don't be lazy. Don't just use the listing agent, because they are not necessarily working in your favor unless you're an expert. You know, now I do that just so they get more commission and I get the deal. But hopefully this means that people will get a buyer's agent and get one who really truly will represent them and understand what that means. What, you know, what do you even need a buyer's agent for? Hopefully to help you negotiate, to make sure that you've got all the proper inspections. Hopefully someone who knows the area, knows the history. Really, it comes down to that. What does a buyer's agent do besides have really beautiful marketing and maybe great hair and a great car?
Yes, I agree with you. But I think this is moving in a way that every other business operates. Like, I just like hiring a real estate agent has always baffled me. People don't do any research. They just pick the family friend or the person at their church or the lady who's on your kid's soccer team, other soccer team member mom, right? And that's the level of research that they put into it. Like, it's always baffled me that that's how it was done before. But going forward, like, it's just going to be, you have to do the same amount of research that you would do for anything else. If you're going to hire a plumber, you're not just going to hire, you know, some Joe Schmo off the street. Like, you're going to go ask people who you trust who are in that industry, or ask people who you know have had plumbing work done recently. Who did you use? What was your experience like? Can I have their phone number? Right. And then you might ask a series of qualifying questions when you get them on the phone. Like, it's just, you just have to do this normal now.
Yeah, that's so true. This whole situation kind of reminds me, remember, like, I guess it was probably 10 or 15 years ago, like when Uber came around and like certain taxi drivers and drivers got with the times and figured it out. And then there were some that were just like stuck their head in the sand and were fighting against it and were suing. And they were just sort of like fighting upstream. And to me, it just kind of feels like that's what NAR is doing. Like KW, a lot of these other brokerages are settling, I think, are trying to adapt to the times and maybe ready to move on a little bit. And then there are others who are just like really digging in hard. When, at least to me, it feels like the winds of change are like already, winds of change? I don't know. What is that a saying?
Atmospheric river has changed past. It is now flowing upstream.
Well, there's raining now, the atmospheric river has changed and now things are changing. This has gone off the rails.
Should we do that again?
No. Yeah, I think it worked. I fully understood what you were trying to say, Dave. The money is stopping flowing for these brokers that don't offer additional services.
Yeah, just like I think people have to accept that things are changing, and there's still a way to make money, as Henry just pointed out. It's just like you need to just adapt to the new time, which is true in every single business.
Every investor does use numerous brokers, right? Depending on whether you're trying to get the deal or not. You know, I'm a broker. Sometimes there's brokers bringing me deals and they're off market, and I'm the buyer in this the scenario, not my service fee. And so I don't really see this changing too much for investors. If anything, it might actually steer more deals their way, because they might just go straight for the calling the listing broker. You know, to Kathy's point, you know, when you're going direct to that listing broker, you do want dual representation if you can get it. So then you are protected. They have a fiduciary duty to kind of watch over you. But investors are a lot more savvy than your normal homeowner, because they're doing a lot more transactions. So for not having representation, they don't care half the time, because they're buying it a certain way and that's what they know to buy, and they're doing their own feasibility in inspections anyways. So I think it actually might push more deals towards investors. The one thing I can see this affecting, though, is off-market transactions. Because a lot of times when you're negotiating direct to seller, is you're looking at, hey, this is a cash convenient sale. You have all this cost when you sell, which is anywhere between 5% and 6%. Many times those sellers will give you that credit to get that discount that you need, right? And it's that inch game where you're just trying to get that net number to them where they're happy and we can make revenue it. Now that's going down by half. So it actually makes a much bigger negotiation for wholesalers and brokers on direct to seller. But I think on market, it's going to push more deals investors' way, but off market, it actually could add a bigger gap and less off market deals could be getting done.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate that insight, James. And we'll all just have to wait and see how this goes over the next couple of months. But I think those are some wise things to keep an eye out for. All right, now we've covered our first headline, and we will be right back with two of the most important headlines impacting the real estate industry after this quick break. Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting, from finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. But Casa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com. Or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
Welcome back to On the Market. Let's move on to our second headline, which is that banks are being rocked again as real estate losses mount. This article talks about a specific bank, New York Community Bancorp, where shares plunged a whopping 38% after posting a $252 million loss in just the last quarter. And this was higher losses than they were expecting. And they were already expecting pretty big losses on commercial real estate. So this is a little bit concerning, but at the same time, I feel like we keep hearing about this pending apocalypse with commercial lending, but so far it's been sort of contained to a few banks. Kathy, do you think this is a sign of more trouble to come in the future?
I think it's a sign of bad business practice, honestly, and lack of diversification. I think in the case of this New York bank, the bulk of their portfolio was an office. And COVID obviously accelerated the work from home environment, but it's been a trend for a while. So, you know, just with business, stay diversified and, you know, make sure you've got plenty of reserves on hand and, you know, don't over leverage and all the things that people should know about. To me, it's like, I wouldn't have done that if I were the owner of the bank.
And James, are you seeing any, with your commercial deals, are you noticing any big change recently in commercial practices? Because I know they've changed over the last few years, but like in the last 3 months, has anything altered?
You know what's funny is I read these headlines and some of it I believe is just hype and is for a specific type of asset and product in the market. And they kind of make it seem doom and gloom with these local commercial banks. But we've had the easiest time getting access to capital from commercial banks on townhome sites, apartment deals. It has not been a struggle to get financing. We actually just got a development loan where we perform it out 20%, right? That we were going to leave 20% of the total project in. The banks appraised it. They ended up giving us a 90-10. They gave us 90% leverage with an interest reserve in there for 12 months.
Whoa.
And because their loan to value position was good and they liked us as a borrower, you know, I think if you have that long-term relationship, don't always shop your banks, guys. Staying with the same bank and getting that consistency with them, they'll lever you more. So even if it's like all this doom and gloom news that the banks aren't really lending, they don't really want to, if they like you, they're being a little bit more aggressive. And so I think build those relationships. You can still get debt, especially on residential. Apartments, townhomes, development, single family, you can get that. Office, yeah, it's not the most desirable, but even right now, we're about ready to list an office building, small office. We didn't think it was going to get much traction. We talked to five banks, and they all pre-approved it for a purchase. And so if you have the right product in the right area, banks will still lend to you. It's not as bad as what I'm seeing in the articles. But I will say some of these guys have made some bad moves and lost some serious money because I was even reading that article. It's like some small ripples. I'm like, $33 billion is a small ripple? Those are
another atmospheric ripple.
Yeah.
Henry, I know you work a lot with local banks. So I'm curious, how would you advise investors who maybe don't have the track record that you have or James has with local banks? Like, how do you establish those relationships to
create that creditworthiness in the eyes of these banks?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first, I want to piggyback off James and say I completely agree. I'm seeing the exact same thing. I've got two deals that I'm closing on at the end of this week, both with local banks, both with creative aspects to them. One, I'm doing an owner carryback for part of the down payment portion. A lot of banks, if they're being tight, they're not allowing you to do some of those things, right? But, you know, this bank is totally fine with that. And another bank, we're closing on a deal where we've got seller credits involved, right? And both of these banks, one of these banks is only my third deal I've done with them. And the other bank, it's the very first deal I've done with them. And so I think what you're seeing is these banks who are smarter, who may have some of these office assets, are trying to diversify and want people who are doing really good deals to bring those deals to them so that they've got some different asset types in their portfolio that have a good amount of equity in them. And so to answer your question, Dave, you've got to speak to these banks in the what's in it for them, right? And the what's in it for them with these small banks when you're brand new is you want to bring them a deal that's got equity in it because that's a lower risk investment for them. They want low risk loans in their portfolio. They have to loan to stay in business. And if they've got a loan to stay in business, they would much rather take on low risk loans in a residential space, because then if they end up with those assets, they're not really stressing about it. They can sell those assets and recoup their money. They're not losing their shirt like they are in some commercial spaces or in some office commercial spaces. And so you've got to have a good deal. That's first and foremost. So if you're buying off market, you can go and get a deal and then bring a good deal to them. If you're buying on market, you've got to get a pre-approval first, and a bank can give you a pre-approval. But make sure when you're going to ask for that pre-approval, you're talking to them about your strategy. What is it you're going to look for? I'm going to look for single and small multifamily that I can get at a 30, 40, 50% discount. I want to bring those assets to you and have you finance those deals. The second thing that you want to mentioned to the bank is that you are looking for a long-term relationship. Banks need deposits and they need to loan. Share with them your plan. I'm looking to buy these types of assets in these markets with this type of equity in it, and I will bring my business bank accounts here to you, and we can have a relationship where I keep my deposits here, you continue to help me grow my business, and I'm helping you grow yours, right? It's you've got to speak to them in the what's in it for them. You can't just go and say, hey, give me some money, I'm trying to do some deals. They need to know what you're trying to do and what's in it for them.
100%. Banks are in the business of lending. They are desperate to lend right now, but it's the basics. You got to have a good deal. They've got to have security. Land development, that's all riskier. So that's going to be more expensive or more difficult to get, but that always has been. Well, not always, but you know, they're going to look at the risk level, and on residential, there's not a whole lot of risk there right now. Just bring them a good deal. And especially if you're putting money down.
This is such a good conversation, because I think, as Henry just brought up and Kathy reiterated, that if you understand how banks make money, you can very easily work with them. And this is so important with any business, any contractor that you work with, any lender, any agent. If you understand what they're looking for, then you can adjust your own strategy, your own requests, your own proposals to them accordingly. And as Henry and Kathy just stated, there's this term in finance where people say that banks are either like risk on, quote unquote, or risk off. And that is basically how much, you know, just a shorthand for how much risk financial institutions are taking. And right now, most financial institutions are, quote unquote, risk off, which means that they are not going to be lending on the type of projects Kathy just said, development or, you know, land deals as readily. But they have to make money. And so if you can bring them low risk deals, they're going to be thrilled by it. So thank you both for bringing that up. I think that's a really important point and really helpful tactical advice here for everyone listening, that if you are worried about being able to finance your next project, think about the relative risk and put yourself, just take a minute and sit and put yourself in the bank's position and ask yourself, like, if I were the bank, would I lend on this deal? And if the answer is no, maybe bring them a different deal and go find something else. We've now hit our first two headlines on Keller Williams settling the antitrust lawsuit and headwinds in the banking sector due to commercial real estate weakness. Stick with us because after this, we're going to be talking about the, spoiler alert, robust labor market.
We know you've heard it before. Cash flow is getting very hard to find. There's always long distance investing, but you may be thinking, I don't have a team, enough experience, or the market knowledge to get in. That's where you're wrong. And that's also where Rent to Retirement comes in. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest out of state with confidence. They've got single family, multifamily, new build, and syndication opportunities across multiple markets. They even have BRRRR deals with immediate equity. Rent to Retirement helps investors learn how to build a bulletproof business plan with the best investment and tax strategies around to help you reach financial freedom through real estate. There's no excuse not to get started in real estate investing when you have the right team and systems already in place. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com.
Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Welcome back to the show. All right, with that, let's move on to our third headline, which is about the labor market. We just can't stop talking about this labor market because it continues to surprise. The headline is that the January jobs report showed U.S. job growth surging. The labor market added 353,000 jobs of January of 2024, which is the highest mark in over a year. And we're seeing strength across a lot of industries. So high paying sectors like professional and business services accelerated and piled on 74,000 jobs. Healthcare added 70,000. And we're seeing wages growing faster than traditional historic rates, above and beyond the pace of inflation. So spending power, after years of getting pretty hammered, is starting to recover slowly. So, Henry, What do you make of this labor report and what it means for you as an investor?
You know what? This is reflecting what I'm seeing here in my local market as well. I think I read that we added like 10,000 jobs last year, and we have about the same amount of people moving to the area. It just shows the strength in the jobs market and some strength in the economy. And I believe that that's going to be beneficial for the real estate market. These people need places to live. A lot of these companies are not doing remote work or are lighter on remote work now. And so that means people have to move to these new places where the jobs are being added. They've got to have a place to live. They're going to be buying homes. They're going to be building homes. They're going to be renting homes. We've also seen a 9% rise in appreciation here in home prices. So I think it all kind of plays in hand. If there are jobs, people are going to need homes. And if they've got money to pay for them, then it just speaks to a healthy real estate market.
Kathy, how do you look at this labor market situation, in particular, how it relates to the Fed and interest rates? Do you think this will change their calculus after signaling they may be open to a pivot and cutting rates in 2024?
Yeah, there's no pivot in sight right now. This was a big miss by economists. They just cannot get a grasp on the job market and why it just keeps expanding and why it just keeps being bigger than expected. I have my theory on that. And the theory is that that second stimulus package was probably not needed. It was a ton of money created and put out in the economy, and it's still out there circulating. You know, when you look at a deficit like we have today, you know, we better have job growth. We better have something for all that money printing. That's again, my humble opinion on it. Lots of money circulating. It's creating lots of jobs. How are we going to pay off that debt? Don't know. Nobody knows how you're going to pay off the debt, but at least we've got job growth.
What do you think, James? Are you seeing confidence from buyers right now? Because it felt like for a couple years, buyers were pulling back a little bit, not necessarily because of affordability. That was obviously a big part of it. But people also want to feel secure with their income before they make a huge purchase. Do you think the continued resilience of the labor market is going to increase some demand for homes?
You know, I think that always is going to be correlated. You know, the one thing about this jobs reports is it's so up and down every month. It's like, oh, finally cooling. Then it's red hot. Then it goes cooling. I swear 2 months ago, it was saying it was way down. And it was going in the right direction. So I do feel like buyers are confident, but more, I do feel like buyers have came to life the last 2 weeks for sure. And I think it has to do more with them just knowing that the Fed is saying, hey, look, we're going to start going in the opposite direction at some point. And so they think there's no free fall. It's funny because when I do talk to people about the jobs report, even real estate professionals, I'll be like, hey, the jobs report came out hot this month. And they're like, oh, what's that mean? Yeah. You know, it's like they're not really paying. They're focused on the now, right? Like most consumers, like what am I experiencing now? And that's the interest rate. And they're not looking at all the factors. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think this was great news, because if it's this hot and it keeps going, and it's even if it's this pulsated, they need stability. And I don't think they're going to start moving rates until there's stability in the jobs market, the economy in general, and not this surging. And, you know, and as an investor, as we're trying to perform out deals, that's what we're looking for: consistency and stability. And every time this goes up and down, it makes me a little bit more nervous, because it could go the opposite way real fast and cause some market shifts.
Yeah, that's a great point. And just to remind everyone why we as real estate investors should be thinking about the labor market, a few reasons. One, first and foremost, labor market very correlated with overall economic growth. So that's really important. The second thing that I think is become more important over the last few years is thinking about the role of the Federal Reserve. We talk about the Fed a lot, but just as a reminder, they have two different jobs. The first job is to maximize employment. So they care a lot about the employment rate, labor force participation, and the many different ways that you can measure and evaluate the strength of the labor market. On the other hand, their second job is to control inflation. And obviously, they've been really focused on that element of their job the last couple of years, because inflation got out of control. But if you think about this job, you see a paradox here, because maximizing employment can lead to an overstimulation of the economy, which leads to inflation. But if you work too hard to combat inflation, that will slow down the economy and negatively impact the labor market and people's ways of earning a living. And so the Fed is constantly on a seesaw. They are just going back and forth and trying to find the right balance between maximizing employment without overshooting and having a lot of inflation. And so that's why these labor market reports are so closely watched by people like us and economists, because they are trying to read the tea leaves and think about how the Fed is going to react to these labor market reports. And so when you see strong labor market reports like the one that we're seeing here, that to me at least signals, hey, maybe even though the Fed has said that they do intend to lower rates in the future, it might take a little bit longer because they don't need to focus so much on preserving the labor market. That's doing great. And they can keep focusing on the inflation piece, which is still above their target of 2%. We're still above 3%. And so that's why we're talking about this and why it's so important, even though it might feel a little bit abstract from real estate investing.
Yeah. And also how it affects us is people keep hoping that mortgage rates will go down, and mortgage rates don't go down when the economy is booming. That's just, it doesn't work that way. So I think, you know, we can at least expect rates will be where they are. And I'm speaking mortgage rates probably for a while, because my guess is the Fed will keep the Fed fund rate where it is until they see things slow down a bit. But I can tell you in the markets that we invest in, like Dallas, Texas in general, a lot of that job growth, Texas was the number one market where that job growth happened, and Florida was pretty close behind. So from an investor perspective, I'm going where all those jobs are going, and that's where we're investing.
This is why we're in the mess we are now, right? That the economy was way too hot, the money was way too cheap, and they cut rates. And so, you know, hopefully, and as much as I hate to say this, they keep rates where they need to be until we get this fixed. Because if they start cutting rates, things could explode again, and we're going to be exactly, I mean, it's great in the short term, right? Like, we all make a bunch of money, we're selling things for a lot, we're renting things for a lot. But there needs to be some stability for us to kind of move forward over the next 5 years.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for your insights on these latest stories. If you have any ideas of stories you would like to hear us talk about on future episodes of On the Market or these correspondence show, please let us know. You can put that in the comments below on YouTube, or you can always find me on Bigger Pockets or Kathy, James, or Henry on Bigger Pockets as well, and share with us your thoughts or stories that are of particular interest to you. James, Kathy, Henry, thank you for joining us. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you for the next episode of On the Market. On the Market was created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kaylin Bennett. The show is produced by Kaylin Bennett with editing by Exodus Media. Copywriting is by Calico Content, and we want to extend a big thank you to everyone at Bigger Pockets for making this show possible.
The housing market is changing, and finding your way right now can be a bit tricky. There are rate shifts, there are confusing headlines, but at the end of the day, your goal hasn't changed. You probably still want financial freedom as much as ever. Well, the good thing is that experienced investors know it's not about trying to time the market. It's about the amount of time you have in the market. And if you're ready to get into real estate investing game, you can still do that. Or you can take your game to the next level by finding an investor-friendly agent. With Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in just a few minutes. You head over to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter in some details about what you want, where you want to buy, and boom, you instantly get matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own. Investments in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose. Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.